The Province Sports Podcast. Back after a week away, it's a new PatCast for you here as we work our way to the end of May. Jeff Patterson, TSN 1040, Jason Botchford of The Province. He's the guy that's been counting down the prospects from 10. We're at 2 right now. The excitement is building, Botch, to the big reveal. I think we all know who it's going to be, but the big reveal comes on Sunday.
Well, yeah, the big story comes on Sunday, certainly, and this is of the 10. This one's my Mona Lisa. So I told them out there to only use the finest paints when putting this together in the paper. I think like this is, it's like, I don't pimp out my stories very often, but this is a good one that has, I think, a lot of really honest, revealing comments from different people involved, including Gradin and Judd and Lyndon, about how did the Canucks end up drafting Elias Pettersson with the fifth overall pick. This is a team that came in talking about meat and potatoes. This is a team that in the past had drafted for need. Had also drafted, one of the things they had used as their measuring stick was the proximity in development of that prospect to the NHL. So how long was it going to take? Was it going to take a year? Was it going to take 2 years? And I think in some ways, like, that kind of thinking can get you into trouble. I don't think it always works out the way you kind of map it out in your head. Like, some of the, like, for instance, Sergachev was seen as like this high risk, high reward guy. He's already in the NHL. Like, I mean, he's like killing it in the Stanley Cup playoffs, right? Like, so it's difficult. I think one of the hardest things is to project when a player is going to make it. Jake Virtanen in his year was supposed to be, oh, this, look at his size, look at his strength, look at his speed. He's close to being NHL ready right now. Well, he's still struggling out of that 2014 draft class. There's lots of guys that have bypassed him already, and he's still trying to figure out his footing and where he fits in the league. So it's taken a lot longer than they thought it would, where guys that were considered a project back then, like Ehlers, who's having a tough playoff, but I mean, he's proven what he can do in the NHL in the regular season, just as an example. He's already excelling. So I think in many ways, the Pettersson draft was about learning from mistakes. I'm not sure if it's 2014 and he was in that, and that same draft happens then, if they go, my hunch is that they go Glass over Pettersson in that draft. And Glass, he had a great year. Yep. Like, I mean, there's no denying that he could be a very good player. And I think one of the things you'll see in the story, is that the Canucks acknowledge that there was quite a bit of debate and quite a bit of, cases had to be made in boardrooms, following the draft lottery when it was determined when they were going to pick. So I think it's actually a story where, like, when I wrote it and when I listened to people and when I did the interviews, there were a lot of moments like, holy shit, like that's pulling the curtain back. Like, that's super revealing that, this particular person allowed that information. So I think that there's a lot of meat on that bone. So yes, you can look forward to it.
I already do. In fact, right. I was going to try and hack into your computer and get an early glimpse at it. Like, it exists. It's done. You've hit submit
can,
on.
I can email it to you.
Okay.
But
what do you do that for?
But it's definitely, you know, it's a story. And one of the things that drove me bananas this week were media out there, like, trying to tell other media or trying to tell the people what is a story and what is not a story. Guess what? Elias Pettersson is one of the biggest stories. Anything he does is a fucking story. And one of the bigger stories of this summer is, will he sign or won't he sign? Will he be in the lineup? Will he be in Utica? Will he be in Sweden? These are all massive fucking stories about this team. So don't tell me and tell the people that it's not a story his GM of his team in Sweden is ruminating about the possibility that he's going back to Sweden. That's a fucking story.
Well, and it went further than that. The GM is saying he would be better served.
Right.
For, you know, to play another season and not just, oh, yeah, of course, they're, I mean, they've got a vested interest. Yes, they want him back. But when the GM is saying for this guy's long-term development, he would be better to stay and play another season in Sweden.
Right.
That's not just lip service.
Well, if you want to make the case and your take is it is lip service and it is self-serving and he doesn't know what he's talking about, go ahead. Go and fucking write 1,000 words on that. But don't be out there telling me what a story is and what a story is not. I'll tell you what a story is.
See, and this was the beauty to me. Like,
I was so fucking mad.
But I can tell. But it's been, what, 6 weeks since the Canucks season ended, and Canuck Twitter drops off a cliff. Like, it's been quiet, let's be honest. Last year at this time, they fired a coach, they hired a coach. The news cycle had some activity. This year, it's been pretty quiet. You know, other than you counting down your prospects, there hasn't been a whole lot going on.
Right.
But this was the week that Snark returned to Canucks Twitter. Like, right. You were getting into it with Walker. Blake was getting into it with Beecher. Bulis is coming off the top rope telling us all how it is and then writing 1,500 words. That was the kicker to me.
Oh,
it's not a story.
Crazy.
Here's 1,500 words.
And, like, so many tweets. I think the world of Bulis. Very good writer, a prominent, like, I think he's got great potential and love that he's part of the media and love that he's regularly covering the Canucks. But fuck me, man. Don't tell me what a if anyone needs to know what a story is, I am the one in Vancouver media who will be telling you what a story is. Me. That's it. No one else. That's it. One person. You want to know what a story is? Come to me. That's it. I'm declaring myself the story determiner. I will determine it.
I like that title. It suits you well. I also got a kick out of the fact that, you know, I think it started, Sakaris kind of floated this notion that maybe they had a little bit of news on Pettersson and you had to listen. And so 1040 thought it had this nugget. The 650 guys were just crapping all, there's nothing there.
Right.
You know, and then Beecher, who is the most mild-mannered guy, and again, a guy that's all about the facts, gets it right,
yeah,
all the kind of
stuff.
He was
just setting the...
But then he drops the, as I tweeted last week, which is essentially him with both middle fingers up to the rest of everybody. Like, I just... That's about as riled up as he gets. But when you get I tweeted last week.
Mad Beecher.
Exactly. Like, I think he wants to be the story determiner.
Yeah, no, and he was, everything he said was 100% correct. Like, I don't think Blake quite understood the points he was making. But, you know, he was just focused on the one element that you can't, you know, he's talking about how, Pettersson's contract can't slide for one. So if he signs, he's here, essentially. I mean, if he gets to Utica or Vancouver and has a panic attack, they can send him back and fuck the year up. And the other case was he was making, which is absolutely right, is they can't advertise him as being part of the Young Stars where he's not in the organization yet. I sell tickets on a guy, like, you can't say
but
he's
going to be. But if it was right there, if they were that close and
to
they.
What?
To signing him.
They're not.
I get this. So, and we'll get into this in a sec, but I'm just saying, if the organization was that close to signing him and they knew that and they were confident that he was going to be there in Penticton, I think you could.
No.
Like, he's your star prospect.
No.
You could splash his face with the little asterisk subject to change. Because the players that they use on the, like, there's no guarantee. Like, any of those faces they used on their poster could get hurt. Could come down with mono. Like, there's no guarantee that the poster boys are going to be in Penticton. So I think you could, if you knew within the next week that you were going to sign Pettersson, you could have put his face
on the
poster. But
there's an entanglement here that he belongs to a team in Sweden.
I understand that. So
you can't sell tickets.
I get that.
Which Beecher did a great job explaining, I thought, anyway. So it seems to you that you're still confused.
No. I'm prepared. Like, I'm not going to, you know, lose my shit over that part of it.
But it is, like... Couple of things. One, there were no negotiations during the World Championships. You can't negotiate with a player until his season is over. His season ended. He was waiting thumb surgery. They weren't negotiating during that time. Okay? So they aren't this close or that close. Like, you know, one of the things, and this is the other thing. I went on, so then Sicaris and that show, Wadden, they're like, come on and talk Pettersson. I'm like, great, man. Like, I'll go on and talk Pettersson. I feel like I know this story inside out. I've talked to everyone that has to do with the Canucks on this while working on my feature. And I've talked to people that are really close to Pettersson. So I go on there. I'm on there for half an hour. I get off and I'm like, fuck, that was like, it was one of those times where I got off and thought like, I did a really good job. I hit the right tone. I gave them good information. I added some layers to the story that maybe other people didn't know about. So I thought it was one of those times where I felt good about myself. And then like a few minutes later, half an hour later, I'm looking at Twitter and they had McKenzie on to talk about Pettersson. And they gosh, like, great stuff from Bob McKenzie on Pettersson. This is unbelievable. Like, Blake tweets it out, 1040 tweets it out. This is amazing. Like, look what he said about Pettersson. I'm like, I just felt like it ruined my whole weekend. Like, all the rest, like, since that time. So I guess we're 17 hours since then. It was around 5 o'clock. I say whatever it is till now, I've been thinking like, what the fuck did Bob say that was so amazing? Like I'm intimidated to even listen to it, to like hear what's so amazing that he got that I didn't get, because I feel like I know this story inside out, and now I'm thinking like, does Bob know something I don't know about this? Like, what's so great about? Did you hear what he said?
I didn't hear the McKenzie segment.
Oh my God!
But now you've got me wanting to go back knocked and listen
me out,
to it.
Knocked me out by the knees, man. I was like, fuck me! Like, great stuff from. What about me? What about my stuff? Wasn't it great?
This is what happens when you take a week off. You kind of lose the focus here. I forgot to mention, the podcast, as always, is a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM. If you haven't bought a car from Eagle Ridge GM, we've been doing this for 3 years. Like, get out there. Support them the way they support us. Start your search online, eagleridgegm.com. It's a long weekend here. You get out in the sunshine. You can stroll the showroom and the lot and get your next ride. It's there for you. Eagle Ridge GM, 2 blocks west of Coquitlam Center, 2595 Barnett Highway in Coquitlam. And it makes me wonder, too, as Pettersson is laid up with this broken thumb now. See, these are the questions that I have. Like, can he ride his unicycle?
I don't know.
Able to juggle?
Is that a story? Is writing about a...
It was.
Hold on.
It was.
Whether he signs or not is no story, but him fucking juggling and riding a unicycle, because I remember reading that story.
That was a story.
So that's a story?
Right.
Don't tell me.
Right. So Eagle Ridge could hook him up while he's...
That was a story.
While he's down here. He's going to need a ride, so can't be... That would seem really dangerous to be on a unicycle with a broken thumb now. You'd just be asking for more trouble.
No, he's immobilized for 2 to 3 weeks. He can't do anything. He won't be lifting any weights. Or 3 to 4 weeks. And he'll be able to keep his cardio up. But he's played a ton of hockey. Last off season, summer was really limited. It was leading up to the draft, preparing for the draft. Then right after that, it was Canucks development camp. He was here. Then right after that, there were camps and Team Sweden obligations he had to do the rest of the summer. So big things are expected of him this summer. Like, this is the summer that he can get strength increases that he didn't get last summer. And I will give you one of the newsy type information that is in my Sunday feature.
Yes.
Is that when he got hurt, he was up to 78 kilos, which is 172 pounds. That's pretty good, man. Like, that's like Kane. Like, this year, Keller played at 170. Kane was drafted at 160. He plays around 175, 177 now. So 172, like, you're fine in the NHL. Like, this whole idea that he needs to put on weight, I think, is outrageous. But he does need to get stronger. And I think now, you know, looking at the summer, they will create a program to get him stronger, and he's got the time and space to do it. Even with the recovery of the thumb injury, he was going to take 2 to 3 weeks off anyway, following the season because of all the hockey he'd played. So, you know, I think that it's going to work out fine with a thumb injury.
And the injury sucks, let's be honest. I mean, it sucks for him. It sucks for the Swedes. It sucks for Canuck fans. And I had, you know, a fair bit of time in my hands. I've been watching the Worlds. Watching him pretty closely when Sweden was playing, and he was playing all right.
No, he was great. That was his best game. He was playing great in
the
that game
he got hurt.
Yeah,
yes,
he was. I thought he was the best player in that game.
His body of work in the tournament was like, he was all right. Like, he wasn't dominating.
Man, he got better.
I'll give you that.
Okay. He got better every game.
That's a story. And now I'm on edge here. Now I'm not sure. But I'm just saying overall, like, you know, where he dominated the Swedish Hockey League, he wasn't dominating the world, but he didn't look out of place at all. And I've heard this sort of line of thinking that maybe it's him and his confidence level that he's not ready to come over here and play next year. And I'm like, dude, like, you've got nothing left to prove in this SHL after the year that you just had.
Yeah.
You go to the world. I know it's not best on best, but there's a lot of really good players, a lot of like big time pros over there. And he was getting a good opportunity. Yeah. He was playing with legitimate National Hockey Leaguers. He didn't look out of place at all. Like, I want this guy to bet on himself that he can get it done here in Vancouver.
Oh, and like, I think he will. Like, he's,
so do I. I think he's going to show up and play here.
He's incredibly, like, he's incredibly committed to being a great player. Like, there are all kinds of stories of him off the ice and his determination to not just rely on what he has, but to better it, to be great. Like, he has a drive that is impressive to guys like Linden. Like, Linden is, you know, he made the most out of his skill set as a player because of his drive. And Pettersson has qualities in him that drive him to be great. And I think ultimately he'll sign. I just think, like, I don't think people appreciate the kind of center of attention he was in Sweden, how difficult it was mentally to be the best player on the best team in the country at 19, to have an historic season, to break records. Like, yeah, we talk about Pettersson regularly enough here in Vancouver. It was every day. He was the focus all the time. And one of the people close to me was saying there was a 3-week stretch where he was a trending topic on social media in that country every single day. Like, he was the man, and he made it happen. Like, he took all of that pressure. He took the weight of his team and all that attention, and he made the most of it. He got better as the season went on, and he did, great things in the playoffs. He led that team to a championship, carried them there, all of that. I just think that there's a certain decompression that a player has to go, especially one that age, after going through something like this. Like, he was in Div 2 last year, right? Like, he was a known quantity, and he was an emerging star in the country, but he wasn't a rock star. And there was a huge step from where he went last year, where people were talking at the draft he was going to fall out of the top 10, and to where he became this year, which is a superstar in that country and at 19 on that world championship team. And you talk about how he looked on that team. I haven't seen this laid out, like, how many 19-year-olds play for Team Sweden at the world championships. There aren't many of them. Like, Nylander, when he played, and it was last year when he finally played his first time with the senior team at the world championship. And he was MVP. It was phenomenal. But that was 3 years after his 2014 draft, right? Like, that was his first time. This was Pettersson's draft plus 1 year. Like, it's very rare, does not happen often, when a player that age gets a prominent role with Team Sweden at the World Championship.
And one of the things I saw too was, people, oh, he's injury prone. Oh, he's a perfect Canuck because he's hurt. You know what? He got hurt. He was going to the net a breakaway.
A great play,
like,
too,
it wasn't like he was over in the corner and some guy was just attacking him and he wasn't fighting back or push back. Like, this guy was taking the puck to the net, doing the things you want to see him do. And it was unfortunate. It was a fluke accident. You don't see many guys break their thumb just going to the net. But, those things happen. But I have, the thumb is, zero concern to me.
No,
like, this stuff happened. He's had the surgery now. He already thumbs up with the other thumb in the hospital bed, seen the picture. Like, the thumb is no problem. Like, there's no issue there.
I think Green's going to love him. Like, I really think, like, that, because that's another part of, like, the layers that, I was talking about, I brought it up on the Sakura show, that, how is Travis going to fit him in? Where is he going to play him? Is he going to give him the best of treatment where he doesn't, start the season on the team or start the season in the lineup? But his ability, like collectively, when you put it all together, he has an elite skill set, right? Like, and that was talked about at the draft. his skating was not seen then as a standout special trait of his. It was good, but just not like standout elite skater. But he has an explosive quickness to him. Like, and this is, I've talked to scouts and people in Sweden about this, and his ability to know when to use that explosiveness helps him create separation and is the reason why he gets so many, he gets a ton of breakaways. Like so many of these, you know, plays that we see, and that one you're talking about where he gets injured, he creates that breakaway on him. He has an innate ability to know when to use his explosive first three steps to create that separation. And that's one of the things that Travis Green like harps on all the time to Hutton, to Virtanen, to Stetcher, to all those guys. Like you ask them, like, what is Green telling you? They're always saying, he's always talking about the first three steps. And he will not have to worry about talking to Pettersson about the first three steps, because that guy has a quickness that the Canucks need, could use, have desperately needed for the past 3 years.
So where do you think all this talk then has come this week that it's now an issue about whether he's going to sign or not?
Well, obviously, it comes from the GM of Vaco. And I don't think, and talking to the people close to Pettersson, I don't think he has any information that, say, I don't have or Great Stuff Bob doesn't have. I think that he's, you know, he's making a judgment. And it's not the first time. I think he said it during the season as well, that he didn't know if Pettersson was strong enough to play in the NHL. And that's fair. Like, that's totally fair to have his opinion. But obviously, that kickstarted the story. And I think what backed up the story was people close to Pettersson saying he hasn't decided yet. He's not sure. Now, all year long, the Canucks have acted like and presented publicly like he's going to be there in training camp. That's what they've said the whole time. So it does change. It's like one of the, like Walker said, like nothing's changed. Like, yeah, it is changed, because up to this point, none of us have talked about no one in the media has talked about the possibility that he wouldn't be at training camp this fall. This is the first time it's become a story. Okay. Now, maybe nothing's changed from Pettersson's perspective on this, but certainly from our perspective here in Vancouver, to hear the general manager talk all year long, and you can go back and look at the quotes, like all year he says, you know, he's going to be there in training camp and this is what we're going to do, and, you know, he's going to start in the wing and all, like, so all year long to hear the GM talk about that, and then to now we have to shift gears and say, okay, like maybe there's nothing wrong. I don't think there's anything really wrong to me if he thinks he's not ready ultimately. Like, I just want to preface this all by saying, like, I do think he's going to sign. Having talked to everyone involved, I do think he's going to sign. I do think he's going to be there this fall. But the idea that he may not is new. That's something that no one talked about that the entire year. And now people are talking about it. Even Bulis, who says it's not a story, was just, the latest story I read was, you know, is it a big deal if he starts the season in Sweden? So we're all now considering that it's a possibility, and we're all considering it for the first time. So that is news. So I think the Vaco GM kicked it off. And I was told he doesn't have any information that any of the others don't have. So he's just speaking on his opinion about it. I think he's wrong. I think that the strength thing is overrated and overstated. Like, Clayton Keller is not some beast, and he kicked ass all season long as a rookie in the NHL. Like, I think Pettersson will be just fine. And I don't want to see him, you know, bulk up, like this whole idea. He's got to be 15 pounds heavier, 20 pounds heavier. No, like, I want him lightning quick. Like, that's part of his whole appeal, and part of what makes him great is the dangle and the quickness and the ability to go backhand to forehand and all of the moves that he brings to the table. I think he's fine. Like, he's 172 now. If he gets stronger in the summer, he's 175. Is anyone going to sweat that? No, that's a normal weight in the NHL. There's a ton of guys at 175 that are having a lot of success. So I do ultimately think it's over. Now, all of this said, in my top 10 prospects, there's a story about number four, Jonathan Dallin. Jonathan Dallin, yes, he had mono last fall, and that kept him out of Penticton Young Stars, where he was supposed to play. But then he went to Utica. Now, everyone in the Canucks talked about him spending next year in the AHL with Utica. Everyone believed that that's what was going to happen. He got there, looked at the Comets, participated in a couple of exhibition games, And yeah, mono was part of it, but there was a huge reality check for him. And Ryan Johnson, I retell the story in the package, and he says, like, he turned to me and said, "I'm not ready for this. I'm not ready. I can't do it." And there is that possibility, right? There is. So if it could happen to Dallin, well, of course it could. It could potentially, Pettersson could have that same reality check here too. So I think that he should take some time and, you know, to really make sure that he's right and he's able. And I think the World Championship was an awesome experience because that's the level of player he's going to be playing every night in the NHL.
I think too, if, you know, there's no guarantees. Like, this was a dream season in Vekwa. Like, there's no guarantee that he goes back and dominates the way, like, the season unfolded for him, for that team. Like, it was a dream year.
Right.
So, you know, can he develop over there? Yeah, sure he could. But I think, again, if I'm advising him, bet on himself. Like, he has shown at every level that he can play and can produce. And so take the next step. You look at his peer group. You know, he went fifth overall. Like, Nico Hischier had a terrific year in the National Hockey League. 20 goals, 52 points. Nolan Patrick played, not as productive.
He had a good second half. He got better. Yeah. He had a good second half.
So this is the guy that's taken a few spots after those guys. Like, he's in that peer group. They had success right out of their draft year. There's no reason, given what we've seen from him after a year in the Swedish Hockey League, to think that he won't, you know, at the very least survive in the National Hockey League. Right. Now, expectations are a different thing, but honestly, Botch, I'm encouraged to hear you tell the story about, you know, the rock star treatment that he got over there, because people, I think there are a lot of people that are, the expectations are going to be through the roof. He's not going to be able to handle the media attention and the demands and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, he just played through all of that.
Right. And, you know, like, Sweden hockey is a massive deal.
Absolutely.
There. So you can just imagine the kind of attention that he got. I don't think people here, like, have really thought or realized that. So, and I do think, like, ultimately, like, if he is deciding, if he legitimately hasn't made up a decision in his head, he's going to look at that season in the Swedish Elite League and he's going to say, like, what else is there to accomplish? I've just kicked ass in this entire league. I've just led the best team in the country's best league to a championship. So that is the difference between him and Dallin, right? Like, Dallin was in that second division last year and went from the second division to North America. I think it's a whole different ball game when you're talking about going from that country's elite league here to the NHL and North America.
Well, we'll see how it goes here, but the pit of my stomach, I can't imagine that he's not going to sign and play here in Vancouver next year. So,
yeah.
You know, but if he takes, whether it's the injury or whether he was going to take the time regardless, go for it. Like, there's no urgency here.
No.
It's not a race to get him signed, other than you can ultimately then put his face on posters for
right. Sell the Young Star tickets.
Is he going to be here in the summer, the showcase, the prospects camp?
I believe he would be, yeah.
Like, I don't think the thumb will affect that.
Again,
we're middle of May, so I would think by first week of July, he should be up and running and ready to go.
In fact, I expect him to be here sooner than that. Like, I expect him at some point to be here to go over like some kind of conditioning program, workout program for the summer to figure out, you know, where they want him to be when the fall starts.
The other thing too about the attention that he's going to attract, and he will, but like, don't forget that there's this other guy, Brock Besser, that kind of, you know, has an orbit all his own when it comes to attention and focus and that's going to be a huge story too. Just watching, you know, has he fully recovered and is he back to 100%? And, you know, once he gets up and running and doing Brock Besser things again, like, that's going to attract an awful lot of attention that will be able to take some of the heat off a guy like Pettersson.
Well, for sure. Like, I mean, you know, especially if, Brock Besser is a huge story no matter what happens.
Right.
Like, if he struggles at the beginning of the year, if he kicks ass at the beginning of the year, like,
if he plays at the beginning of the year,
but it's not just going to be all about Pettersson. It's going to feel like that for a little bit because we are there are great expectations about him. And that is totally fine. There should be great expectations. He has, like, his play has earned himself those expectations. Like, he had a phenomenal historic season. We should be amped up to see him. And, you know, one of the comments that I've seen people say is like, oh, look at you guys in the media. You're going to build them up and tear them down. And no, we're not going to build them up and tear them down. Like we all understand. I think most of us, if I can speak for the media again, understand that there may be.
And in your role as story determiner, yeah, you're allowed to, yes.
Right. There may be, there's going to be some struggles that you can't just expect them to walk into the NHL and just start blowing away the league. Maybe he does it, but I don't think if he doesn't do it, we're all going to sit here and say he's a bust and he sucks. Like we're still, I'm one of, you know, there are those of us who are super supportive of Vertanen, and he's been kind of feeling the league out now since 2014. We still think, a lot of us, that he can be a really effective, you know, I heard Bruff. I was on with Bruff the other day and he predicted that Vertanen would score 20 goals this season. I was like, it stuck with me ever since. Like, how is he going to get to 20 goals? He's not going to be on the power. Is Vertanen going to be on the power play? And is he going to be on the top six? Like, I see Vertanen playing a lot with Brandon Sutter, don't you?
Well, we saw him a little bit on the power play at the tail end. Twins are gone. He's not going to be on the top unit, but we'll see if there's a trickle down. And I am curious. To me, the power play is fascinating just because as bad as the Canucks were, the power play was so good, and now you take the Twins out of that mix and Vanek, who was a part of it. Like, you know, can this power play, like, Newell Brown was terrific. Like, he did his job last year.
Right.
But he's got his work cut out for him. Like, if he thought he had work last year, like, it's even more so now with the Twins, the safety security blanket of the Twins gone. That power play produced, what, 53 goals, I think? Like,
right.
It's crazy to me to think that with the component parts they have right now, and we don't know what they're going to look like ultimately when they get to training camp in September. Mm-hmm. But if you're not scoring 53 goals in the power play, then that puts even more pressure on you 5-on-5, right. And they were one of the lowest scoring teams in the league 5-on-5 last season. So I am curious to see, you know, how effective the power play can be, what it looks like, who's on it, and does a guy like Vertanen, you know, is there a role for him? 20 seems like an ambitious total. I'm not here in May to make my predictions about goals and goal scoring.
So, do you have any reaction
I'll
to
take,
the 20?
No, I mean, I'll take that under advisement. But look, there's months ahead for me to compile my lists here.
But
I think people forget, too, when you just talk about expectations. Like, there was a month of the season before November 4th when Besser had the hat trick against Crosby and the Penguins. Like, he didn't get off to a terrific start last year.
No.
Didn't play those first two games. Once he got into the lineup, like, it was a slow start. He had a great preseason, earned him the spot on the team. You've documented at length the fact that he wasn't even supposed to make the team in the summer, but did what he did. But the month of October, like, there was a slow build-up there. And I think some people forget that just because of how effective he was the rest of the way and that month of December when he carried the hockey team on his back single-handedly. But it wasn't like he came out of the gates flying.
No.
And
right.
There's still love for Brock Besser in this market.
And there was all kinds of love for him over that stretch. Like, he didn't have a great – you're right. His first 6 weeks weren't sensational. And we were all saying, like, this is great. This is fine. Like,
this is a rookie in the National Hockey League.
We're still fighting over what the kid's nickname was going to be. So, he was fine. He got fine treatment. Horvat struggled a ton in his first year. And then in his second year, went through the 27 games without a goal, and he was treated fine. You know, this idea that the media is out there to break these guys down is just absurd. And it's just not going to – I promise you, it's just not going to happen that way.
No, if there's guys that are going to take the heat, it's the veterans.
That's right.
And those are the guys that deserve it.
They are going to get the heat. That's right. Absolutely. And as well they should. I did learn something this week, though. And this kind of blew me away. The player that the Canucks receive the most calls on, more calls than anyone, sometimes every day the Canucks are every day they get calls on this guy sometimes. Or there was a week recently where every day. At least four teams called about him, including the three California teams, San Jose, LA, and Anaheim. Any guess at all on who this may be?
A roster player?
Yeah.
Spent the bulk of last season on the roster?
Yes.
Sweet Lou?
No.
Come on.
No.
Tell me it's Lou.
Lou's only got Montreal. That's the one team that's interested in Lou. No, it's Brandon Sutter. And LA, San Jose, and Anaheim all called about him. I was surprised to see. You know what? I'm surprised and not surprised. Because
did Travis hang up the phone right away?
The, the Pacific Division is kind of like, it's almost like the old boys network. Like they're still trying to play this old school big boy hockey.
Even though Vegas has just skated circles around.
Right. Yeah. Right. And Vegas took advantage of that. You're absolutely right. And I'm worried about these teams. It just feels like they're going to get, if they keep this up, they're going to get left in the dust by teams like Vegas. But you can see teams that have that old school mentality, why maybe Anaheim would want a Sutter to help their center depth. They got in trouble last year with injuries to Getzlaff and Kessler. And they were hurt down the stretch and at the beginning of the year, both times because of that. So I can see why the interest would be there. I also think that it has kind of had the opposite effect you would think it would have on the Canucks. Like, to me, my reaction would be like, fuck yeah, let's do this. Like, imagine if they could get a bitty more.
Yeah, three of you, let's go. Cards on the table.
If they could pull like a first round pick for Sutter, like I would volunteer to be the parade marshal. We would march up and down Robson Street cheering.
But you're cheering. But from the way you're setting this up, now they're thinking we've got this valuable commodity that
he's got a lot of value. He is valued around the league.
Therefore, we
just lost Henrik Sedin. We've got to hold on to this guy. That's been the response from them. So I don't expect them to trade him. But man, if they did and they got a ton for him, and I was telling this story to someone else in the media, and they're saying like pull that off and go chase like Rask out of Carolina and go chase like someone else to fill that role, especially if you get like a really high draft pick. And if all of these teams are really that hot, for the so-called foundation of this team.
Well, and that sort of brings the conversation back to Pettersson again, because the way the depth chart sits right now, you've got Horvat in the middle, and then this massive gap, and then Sutter. And I think we all agree in Vancouver that Sutter can't play higher in the lineup. You don't want him in your top six.
No,
as a puck distributor and a setup guy. Like, that's not who he is.
I think he's got, the objective should be to, if you want to score more, the objective has to be to get him fewer minutes.
Right.
You think, right?
Which I just don't know. I don't know if Travis Green's prepared to go down that road of backing him off. But, and I think you made the point on the radio somewhere too, like, you know, if Pettersson's coming over, you have to set him up and give him every opportunity to succeed by playing him with like-minded guys that can help him produce offense and help him do what he does best, which will in turn help the hockey club. So if we think Horvat and Besser are going to play together, who knows what happens on the left side there. But that second line all of a sudden, like, I don't want any part of Pettersson coming over here, the big buildup, and then being asked to play his way up the lineup and, you know, start
it's
from
like
a fourth Granlund line.
On the fourth. Yeah, Granlund's the center on the fourth line.
I have zero appetite. Like, I start to get, like, almost botch angry. I'm almost going to pound the table when I start to think that way. So, to me, that brings it all back to free agency, and whether it's Bozak or somebody else, like, you know, where do you slot Pettersson? Like, who does he play with on this hockey club?
Right, and I think that they will see it as a very important aspect of building this team for next season, getting an offensive-minded center. And aside from Sutter, I mean, that's a big trade chip. Should be a big trade chip for them. And I do think that they would look at the idea of trying to get a center for him. I've seen it thrown out there, you know, why not Sam Reinhart? Certainly a guy that the Canucks have had interest in before. They've, you know, had interest in him at the draft. I'm not sure that they would have taken him if they were going to trade up to one. That was the rumor back then. I'm not sure that they would have done it, but they've been interested in Reinhart. So there's one. That's the type of guy that I think that they would try to chase down in a tandem type deal.
Yeah, I think you have to look at Buffalo. I mean, they've got the first pick. You know what they're going to do with it there, but, you know, they're already being linked to other deals and what they might do. Like, I do think that that's a team that's been down so long that they've got to do something. They have to make something happen. And so, right.
And
you know,
Carolina being the other one where everything, right, apparently everyone's
open for business sign is out. Yeah. So, you know, get in on those markets, see what can happen because, you know, we have said it repeatedly. They just can't come back with the same defense. Like they can't. I mean, Travis Green's lasting impression on me from his final media availability was when he kind of hit the desk in front of him and said, like, we need more offense from the defense. And, you know, right now, and I'm not expecting them to overhaul the roster in April and May, but we're starting to approach the draft and then beyond that free agency. Like, we're getting into that 6-week window where you reshape your hockey club. And, I mean, they just can't come back with the same defense that they had last year. So they do have to make something happen.
Yeah, and I don't think they will. And I think it's possible that Joel Levy is in the lineup in the fall. Like, why can't he outplay Delzato and Hutton and Pouliot? Like, I don't think he has to be that amazing to outplay those guys. You know, Hutton struggled with conditioning all season long, and he outplayed Delzato. He was better than Delzato was. So, I don't think Travis would trust Joel Levy to step in and play 20 minutes a game. But you look where Stetcher started last year, and I can totally see Joel Levy making that type of progression over the course of the year, where he starts the year playing 12, 13 minutes, and by the end of the year, he's a main guy in the top four and used all the time. Like, I think that he has that kind of ability, and he has those kinds of skills, and I think that he could be a difference maker for that defense. He's better when he has the puck. He was Joel Levy story today, and Salah talked about, you know, by the end of the year, he was our number one guy in the power play, and he had this, you know, ability to get pucks on and do the things that he does well. Why can't he be trusted on give him the second power play unit and let him take off? To get back to your Noel Brown point, like he almost had, like it was almost like astronaut food for him this past year, where you add water and all of a sudden you got some beef stew or some, you know, mac and cheese type dinner. Like that power play was brutal the first 6 weeks, and he put Brock Besser in the spot and it took off, and Besser was responsible for half the goals that the team scored on the power play from that point on. But it was already there. Everything else was there, right? Like, you had the Sedins doing their thing. They had Edler doing his thing. You just needed the so-called bumper spot or net front guy, and you needed Besser in the spot and it took off. So, but you take the Sedins and it's like almost like you're starting from scratch, right? Now you got to really cook. Like, you got to make a real meal. There is pressure on Noel Brown that there was not on a year ago. But I do think Joel Levy can help him. Like, Joel Levy's better than I'm convinced he's better than all of their options on the left side aside from Alex Edler right now.
Joel Levy, number two on your prospect list as you work down. It went Jašek, Palmu, DiPietro, Gadjevic, Lind, Gaudette, Dahlin, Demko, Olli Levy, and it all builds to the number one on Sunday, and you can probably figure it out from there. I can't get enough Sammy Salo when it comes to him talking about Olli Levy.
Awesome.
And I'm a skeptic, and by nature I'm a skeptic, but I've always been. And we were in Buffalo the day he was drafted. Like, he's not an overwhelming guy. There's nothing about Olli Levy that is overwhelming. Like, even in his presence, like, I walked away from draft day. I don't want to say he looked disinterested, but I read the quote, Sammy Salo. He talked about, you know, there's times where during the game, he just looks disinterested. And I loved Sammy Salo. I loved him as a player. Loved dealing with Sammy Salo from a media perspective, too, because, like, he's just being honest. Like, every time he's asked about Olli Levy, and this guy's been behind the bench, he's worked with him, like, it's been his project this year,
right,
and yet he won't give him an inch. Like, he's talked about his conditioning at times, he's talked about his interest level, he's told them that it's hard in the NHL, like, you know, it's really hard, like, you might think you understand, but it's gonna be harder than, like, and he just, like, but I think it's all great. Like, he just continues to deal this guy heavy doses of reality.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Like, there's just no blowing smoke. There's no sugarcoating. Like, there's so many of these young guys, you know, from the time they've been 12, 13, and 14 headed on this track. Like, they've just been put on a pedestal. You know, their coaches have told them how great they are. And for whatever reason, like, Sammy Salo just whacks Olli Levy constantly with these doses of reality. But I think in the long run, it's going to help him.
Yeah, and, like, wouldn't it be great if every first-round pick, like, had that personal mentor and coach to, like, I think almost everyone, like, we all, like, all of us at 18, 19, 20, like, we need someone
Absolutely.
To lean on. We need someone to give us Yep. the tough love and the sugar when it's appropriate. I think it's a great scenario how it's played out that Yul Levy has had this kind of personal assistant, personal mentor, personal coach to kind of guide him. And let's face it, he's needed a lot of guidance. Because he's a guy that for a lot of reasons, growing up, things came very easy for him, and he ended up probably didn't help him that he ended up on a juggernaut London team like that. I think that the like six or seven players from that team are either in the NHL or going to end up in the NHL. He's got two parent Met, Victor Met, who's already played like 30 something games with the Habs this year, is in.
Yep.
His other pairing partner, Bouchard, is about to go high in the NHL. Like, that team was insanely loaded. So things were easy for him growing up. He was always better than everyone and his peers and colleagues or people his age. Things were easy, became easy for him in London. He did need to face some adversity. He did need to be challenged and have that adversity. And one of the things that Salo pointed out, like, I was in this Twitter argument today with this guy, Ryan, about Ben Hutton. And he doesn't believe, he thinks the whole Ben Hutton conditioning thing is a farce. It's all fucking made up by the coach. And to which I said, like, if you think that Travis is making that up, like, you don't know Travis Green. Like, he's not, like, he's honest. He is a straight guy. When he says that Hutton's conditioning is an issue and it got worse over the course of the season, he's not lying to you. And one of the presentations that the guy made to me was like, look at all these minutes that Hutton played in October. Like, does this look like a guy that's out of shape? And you look at it, and he did play top pairing minutes, 23, 24 minutes. But guess what? If your fitness is not up to standards, if you don't have great fitness in hockey and in the NHL, guess when it catches up to you? A month into the season, 6 weeks into the season, after you've played a ton of games, you can't get up anymore. You can't maintain that level anymore. And that's what happened to Ben Hutton. That's why he fell off in November, or a big part of it. That's why the healthy scratches happened. And, you know, and part of it was Green. And then Green said, like, look, dude, like, you got to lose weight. You got to lose weight. And he struggled to lose weight over the course of the season. Now, going back to Yul Levy, was the same thing that Salo pointed out, was that the conditioning caught up with him after he had played all of these games. So he plays a ton of games with Turku. He goes to the World Championships, plays a ton of games. Then he gets back, and he's fucking spent. He's got nothing for the second half of the season. And that's when the healthy scratches happened. That's when conditioning became an issue. And that's when Salo pointed out to him and said, look, you're not in good enough shape.
I think, too, for Hutton, it's important to remember, if you're looking at October numbers, you have to take them with a grain of salt. Edler got hurt in the third game of the season. Stetcher got hurt in, like, the eighth game of the season. Tanev got hurt for the first of his many injuries. There was a time when all three of those guys were out of the lineup.
Right, so but he was good. He was fine. And playing 23 minutes a night, and he was fine.
I agree. But it was also out of necessity
that
his numbers, I mean, the healthy bodies that they had behind were forced to play bigger roles. And then when those guys got back, like, Edler got hurt early, missed, I think, a dozen games, and then really was healthy the rest of the way and played some of his best hockey. So I bring the conversation around to, you know, you mentioned Yul Levy. Could he outplay Hutton? Could he outplay Delzato? In theory, yes.
Oh,
but
come on.
No, but you watched 82 games of Michael Delzato, and the coach loved him and backed him up, at least publicly.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, like, I mean, how many times midseason we thought, like, is he right on the verge of being a healthy scratch? The guy ended up playing all 82 games.
Right.
Like, he was never coming out of the lineup. So,
and what was one of the reasons that he was in phenomenal shape?
Look how
hard he works off the ice. Look how great shape he is in. Look what he's doing. And that's why Salo is so right to keep harping on this. Because if Travis Green gets a whiff of Yul Levy not being in elite condition, it's going to be a reason that he's going to sit him. It's going to be a reason that he's not going to make the team. It's going to be a reason he's not going to play him. So I'm glad Salo takes every opportunity. Like, it does often, like, Like one of your points, it often like looks like he's just smashing you a levy when every time you hear and read Salo talk, he's always harping on Yul Levy's conditioning. But when I asked him, I said, does he get it? Like, do you think he gets it? And Salo just started laughing. He's like, he better, man. He better. And, you know, we talked about how many times he's talked to his agent, you know, and we've all heard how many times he's brought it up publicly. Like, it is a super important issue. And I believe Salo when he says that he gets it now. But he better, because Green will bench you if the conditioning isn't there.
Like, I just, every time I read those quotes from Salo, I have that vision of, you know, that picture of Torts in Yannick Hansen's ear on the bench. I think it was in Ottawa. Like, I put Salo's face on Torts' body, and I put Yulevi in Hansen's spot there. And I just kind of vision Sammy Salo walking back and forth behind the bench with like a sledgehammer in his hand, just ready to crush this guy at every turn. But he's doing it for the right reasons.
I'd almost, like, to me, when I hear Salo, he almost sounds like Torts would be mad at you.
Right.
He'd be fucking furious and chewing you out. Salo to me is like the parent that's you've legitimately let your folks down. Like, you've had one of those moments as a kid where you did something you shouldn't have done and it really hurt. Like, it really broke the heart of your mom or something. Like, that's how, like, I'd rather hear Torts yelling at me, like, that I can deal with, then looking over at Salo and, you know, this heartbroken look, like, dude, you're conditioning, man. You got, like, come on.
Is that the latest Sammy Salo injury now? Is that a broken heart? Is that even in retirement, he's still suffering these injuries. But when I look at the left side of the defense, and again, I'm hoping for an overhaul. I'm not sure that I'm expecting one. But Del Zotto's back for this season, under contract for one more year. He's going to play, and he's going to play a lot. And what did we see in the final 2 weeks of the season? Alex Edler playing 26 to 30 minutes a night. And what happened? The Canucks won games. I mean, they changed the style they played. Markstrom played some of his best hockey. But one of the common denominators in that final couple of weeks was Alex Edler playing 26 minutes a night, and they were producing results. I just get this feeling Travis Green's going to start the season. He's like, hey, it worked for us late last year.
Oh,
I'm coming out of the gates. Alex Edler, I'm leaning
on
you.
No, he won't. He can't do that. You can't play a whole – Edler can't – you can do that. You can flip that switch at the end of the year. You can't start a season with Edler playing 26. He's going to get hurt. You know that.
I may know it. You may know it. But I'm
not
sure.
He knows it. That's something that they really got to look at. I think they had four players this season that played 75 games. Like, they got to have a real problem – keeping guys in the lineup. It was the fewest number of players on any team in the NHL where of guys that played at least 75 games. So for me, that's more than just like fluke injuries. And it's something that's been the case for the past 3 years. Like, they have to figure out a way to keep guys in the lineup. Edler's going to be one of their most important guys and could be one of their most important trade chips if he's ever, you know. Will he wave? I heard you asked about that today.
I think he's going to resign here. I think he loves it here. I think they love him. I'm looking at an extension for Alex Edler. Like,
yeah.
Forget. And you know, like, if he plays like he did for the most part last year, I'd be all right with that. But at some point, you can't be playing the guy 26 minutes a night as he gets older. I do think you have to scale it back. But, you know, you look around these teams and even the teams that are in the playoffs, like, you can have one guy who's kind of been a career guy, a veteran guy, Chara in Boston, Buffalo hasn't always played in Winnipeg, but, you know, they're getting great mileage out of him, even at this stage of his career. You know, there are other examples. Orpik in Washington. Like, you can, you know, yes, I want an overhaul of the Canucks defense, but that doesn't mean shipping six guys out and bringing six new guys in. But it does mean addressing the deficiencies that have been on this blue line for far too long.
Don't you think things would have been so much better if they had traded Gudbranson? They now they're keeping Tanev. So the second pairing could be Tanev and Uelevi. And the first pairing is Edler and new guy. Whoever they can find some right side guy to play with Edler. I think that at a top four like that, you'd have a much better shot at some success and changing the dynamic. I just have a hard time believing that the dynamic can be changed if, like you say, Del Zotto's going to get all this minutes. Okay, there's one top four guy, and the other two are Gudbranson and Tanev. Like, how is that lineup? How is that? If those are three of your top four defense, you're not going to win.
Right.
It's not going to succeed.
Well, you're certainly not not generating more offense. Like, you're not addressing the one thing that had Travis Green pulling his hair out at the year-end press conference was, we need more offense from our defense. And you're bringing back, you know, not just bringing back four guys that you had last year, but Tanev gives you nothing. Gudbranson gives you nothing. And Gudbranson and Tanev only played half the season. So, right. You know, if you start this year.
If they're healthy all year and those two guys are in your top four. And I hope they realize that Delzato's not going to, like, this whole idea is this offensive pushing defenseman that's going to help you on the power play and produce points. Like, that was the sell job last summer. It's not going to work. Like, he's just not that guy. It just didn't happen. People thought he was going to be that guy. He looked early in his career like he could be that guy. But in the NHL, he's just not going to be that guy.
Is he going to be watching the Royal Wedding tomorrow?
He dated Markle, right?
Apparently. Like, if you Google Michael Delzato and Meghan Markle, you get all sorts of stories in which they deny any sort of relationship. So I have no idea.
I know. I try to keep that one hidden because I – like.
But there is a Canuck connection to the royal wedding.
I know. I think that they wanted me to do that story at some point this year, and I was like, fuck that. I'm not asking Delzato about, like, Markle.
But, like, what I loved, and I read a couple of the stories, the British tabloids, in which, you know, he's.
Delzato's in it?
Yeah. And there's a couple of great photos. Like, honestly, if you Google Michael Delzato, Meghan Markle.
All right.
And this was before Prince Harry. Like, this is after her first wedding or her first marriage. She was back on the market. We know that he's one of Canada's most eligible bachelors, but there's some great photos of. Delzato and Meghan, and then Harry in the middle, like they photoshopped Harry in the middle, like as if like Harry somehow stepped in,
broke him up.
Yeah, but what I always love, anytime and in the British tabloids, they refer to him as a hockey star, handsome hockey star, and I went to school with a guy who had some success acting like 20 years ago, went down to Hollywood and got some jobs and stuff, and he played a little bit of hockey growing up,
right,
but. Like, anytime that angle arose when they were telling stories or writing stories about this guy, it was always, like, hockey star.
Right.
And, like, I'm not sure that he was any better than I was and my career didn't go anywhere. But it's just such an easy, like, you know, forget just hockey player. No, hockey star. And so, yes, in one of the things I read, he was described as, like, 27-year-old
Sounds like
handsome.
You're going to be up at 4 a.m. on Saturday morning.
No, that was the extent of my.
You're not going to watch it?
I will not.
Will your wife?
No, she was lamenting the fact that it's the middle of the night. She said if it was earlier, if it was a 4 o'clock wedding in England, you know, 8 a.m. here maybe, but but it'll be replayed and re-aired. I'm sure she'll
That's not never the consume. Same as live, though.
No, it's not. But I can kind of tell you what's going to happen tomorrow. I'm not sold, like, for the long term here. An American sort of infiltrating the British royal family.
Oh, wow.
You're
predicting divorce already. You're that guy.
MDZ might, I don't know, second go around. Who knows? It might be him in the middle of the pictures this time.
How did he lose? Like, how did he let Markle go?
I don't know.
Man.
That story never surfaced, like, to my knowledge, while he was here. Like, it came up after the season. So
will you ask him about it at training camp?
Well, we may have to. We'll see.
You want to do that together?
Yes.
I would help.
On Royal Watch?
I don't want to be alone. Okay.
I got your back. You know that.
All right.
Podcast always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. You can check out the inventory online, eagleridgegm.com, or you can get out to the lot, 2595 Barnett Highway out in Coquitlam, two blocks west of Coquitlam Center. So you have reached the end of the line here because you're going to take a little bit of downtime yourself.
Well, hold on.
We
can't get past you, Levy, without this fucking video game thing.
Okay.
You know that,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Like, I heard you asked about I was just coming in, leaving the car when I heard you asked about it. On Brough and Halford. Did they bring up Yo Levy to you? Did they say that?
Yeah. I mean, his name's been linked now to this Merrick story.
I do not understand. Like, I've read, someone showed me the Reddit posting where they apparently they have all this evidence that Yo Levy fits all the categories that Merrick listed off. And it's outrageous. It's absurd. Like, because Bouchard or one of his roommates talked about him playing video games. I'm telling you, all of these guys, all of them play video, like Stetcher, Vertanen, all of the young guys on the Canucks play video games all the time. Like Vertanen, that thing with the Twitch girl.
Yes.
Like what she did was she did commentary while a video, like they film her doing commentary while someone else is playing a video game, is my understanding, or she's playing and doing commentary. Like, they play video games so much, they watch other fucking people playing video games. They love fucking gaming. All of them. Like, a ton of them. And they all talk about Fortnite and all that shit all the time. So because Yua Levy plays video games or plays a lot of Fortnite or whatever, it doesn't mean that he's this guy whose career is going to be overturned or upended because he plays a lot of vids.
Well, the one that got me was, apparently, according to the story, it's a prospect that's never going to play in the NHL.
Yeah, like Yua Levy's going to play like that many. Like I was just flabbergasted.
And he was in Finland this past year, so like
already a pro.
But Evan Bouchard wasn't around him this year.
Right.
And
well, Merrick said apparently the information was a year old.
Okay, but the other part that nobody's taking into account now is that Sammy Salo is behind Ole Olevi.
Yeah, right. Like
even at home, like.
Salo's gonna stand for that.
Yeah, he sits there in a chair in the guy's bedroom, like at late at night. I'm watching you. Step away from the vids. So,
Yua Levy.
It got people talking, sure.
But Yua Levy may not like this is what floored me. Like that people actually thought it's possible that he's not gonna play in the NHL. He is playing in the fucking NHL. He may not be the star that Sergachev looks like he can be. He may not be the star that McAvoy already is. And that the success of the guys taken after him have taken like the polish off, and unfairly have taken the polish off Yua Levy, because that doesn't impact what Yua Levy can be and will be in the NHL. He can still be a really good player. He can still be, yes, a top pairing defenseman. He can be Ham Hughes or better than that in that range. You know, maybe he's not a superstar that's going to win the Calder. He is going to have an NHL career. He is going to fucking play in the NHL. So what floored me was all of, like, so many people thinking, yeah, Yua Levy makes sense. How does it make sense? Like, that many people don't think he's going to play in the league? Are you kidding me? Like, his year in Turku, he got 19 points in 38 games. He got half a point a game in a pro league, in Finland's best league. And as Salo said, he was their best defenseman down the stretch and in the playoffs. He's on track.
Yeah. No, when I read the story, and you know, I read the story first, and then in my mind was trying to come up with, all right, who might this be? Then I saw people linking Yua Levy to it, and it just, to me, it didn't fit on a number of levels. So who knows if we'll ever find out who the guy is, but I just personally don't think it is Ole Yua Levy. I mentioned the list, and you've been working on this and sort of releasing them on a daily basis over the last couple of weeks. Jacek, Palmu, DiPietro, Gadjevic, Lind, Gaudette, Dahlin, Demko, Yua Levy, and Pettersson will be number one. And the criteria was guys who haven't cracked the NHL as regulars. Obviously, Dahlin, or Gaudette rather, has played a couple of games in the NHL. But
yeah, like it guys, would take Goldobin yes, off. Like Goldobin right, yeah, was yeah, the one I was thinking so, of that people would think, so call we, him a prospect.
We've all known those names. We've all gathered our own intel on these players. You talked to essentially the people that have been closest to these players over the last year, whether it's coaches, management, agents, those types of people. I mean, what's your takeaway as a whole? Because we kind of throw it out there that the cupboard is stocked now. It's better than it's been maybe ever for the Vancouver Canucks. Like, as right, you compile these lists, the 10 of these players, do you feel better about the Vancouver Canucks and their future? Or, you know, does it just kind of reinforce the notion that, yeah, this is fine, but we've said it many times, they need a whole lot more?
Well, I think one of the things that it really drives home is that there's Pettersson, and then there's a massive canyon, okay? And then there's everyone else. They need more Pettersson type of players if they're going to be like Winnipeg. Like Winnipeg has like 6 or 7 of these type of guys in the lineup. And they need more guys with elite potential. I think, you know, when I break it down and I see 2 goalies on the list and only 1 defenseman, that obviously stands out to me. And this is the other point that I was making on Twitter yesterday. If the Canucks were worried about Yua Levy, they wouldn't have gone last year center, you know, or forward, their first, right, a goalie. Like their first 4 picks, they didn't take a D. That's in that 2017 draft. So, and four of those guys are in the top 10. Great draft, right? Or no, in Palm, the Palmu draft, yep, too. So five of them make up the top 10. So the a couple of things. One, 2017 draft has great potential. It's got to come through. There's not enough guys with elite upside, that the type that Pettersson has. Need more guys, top end guys like that. Another thing, there's four second round picks on the list. Great. Like, that's amazing. Shows you how valuable second round picks are. Go out and chase some more. Try to get more picks. You've done well. Couple, Jaschik and Palmu at the bottom. Love their upside. It may not work out. They may not make it. But when I looked at them, I picked them over guys like Brisbois and McEwen, guys that are going to get a chance in the NHL at some point, but just don't, like, top end for Brisbois is probably third pairing, right, defenseman. Like, Jaschik and Palmu have real legitimate upside. So, you know, I love the 2017 draft, you know, just one guy from the 2016 draft. So you got to make up for that. You got to do better than that. I think that they obviously believe in Joel Levy. But there's a clear hole on defense. Like, they need defensemen with big upside, guys that potentially could play top three, top four type minutes. So that's got to be a priority in this draft. Now, when you break down that 2017 draft and you see, Pettersson, okay, then they went Lind. And part of the reason that bracket, their, chief amateur scout talked about Lind was he said, like, look, we saw a guy that we think can play with Pettersson. Like, he's got that kind of hockey intelligence and IQ. So that's why we went Lind. Great. I love that type of thinking. Then they had a luxury pick in the Gadjevich pick after that, which they got from Columbus. They saw him, they fitted him, and they wanted him, you know, through that second round. They saw him as filling a need, and they do need, like, they need size. Like, he brings that element to the table, right? Like, they need the type of player he is. They need him to work. Right. And then they went goalie. So that blueprint suggests to me, like, that was a team that went into the 2017 draft saying, we got to fix the offense. I would suggest to you then the 2018 has got to be, we got to fix the defense. So my feeling, I wouldn't be surprised if they go DD, take a defenseman at seven, take another defenseman. And they believe that there's going to be some really good defensemen available at the top of the second round. Now you go DD. Now I like all of that conceptually, and I love, you know, 2017 draft and learning from mistakes and stuff. But it also brings out the point that, you know, there were some misses, and 2016 wasn't great, and right, it pales in comparison. So they need help. They need to hit some home runs. They need to take guys with big upside, guys like with Pettersson type upside. And I think before, in Virtanen and McCann and Joel Levy and even Besser, like, all those were kind of safe, high floor picks, right? And the worked out great with Besser. It hasn't necessarily worked out great with the other guys. I don't think, and I think that they see this now, like, high floor is a great strategy. Like, high, like, the guys that can pay off the biggest. That's, to me, the guys with the biggest upside. That's what you got to look at, because they need more in that Pettersson camp than that of the other group of guys that have some upside, but probably aren't going to be what Pettersson is.
I looked briefly. I didn't make a note of it, and I just ask this on the spot. Did you compare last year's top 10 prospects, like, at this time, the list that you did?
Yeah.
Like, and who has fallen out? Like, I think Subban was on that list a year ago. Obviously, he's moved out of the organization. Right. I don't know if it was Will Lockwood, probably.
Right, yeah. Will Lockwood had a tough year. And he may still work out, but yep, I just don't think that he makes a list like this now because of the injury. Vertanen was at the bottom of the list last year just because I think that his ceiling's kind of limited. And it's kind of, you know, this year was quite similar, in fact, for Vertanen to his first year. But we did see spurts. We certainly saw the speed, and, I'm actually more encouraged right now about Vertanen than I was, you know, putting this list together when he was on it a year ago.
Since you and I last did one of these, we took last week off, the news had been out there, but it's now been confirmed. Penticton's going to happen, but scaled back, not nearly the sort of sexy tournament that it has been. Like, it has been such a great event and a great way to kick off the hockey season. And this news that was, you know, a press release just kind of takes the air right out of this thing.
Those Calgary teams just ruined it, eh? Like, Seattle can't get here soon enough. Like, get Seattle in the mix, and hopefully you can – or those Alberta teams. Like, they – like, why – has there been a story done on why the Alberta teams pulled out?
No, and – you know, with all due respect to college hockey in this country, I'm sure UBC and Alberta will put on a show, but you're not selling tickets. You know, it was always about, you know, see, I mean, never before has there been the interest that there is in prospects across the board. And so to be able to see not just the Canucks, but what they're up against and, you know, what Calgary and Edmonton and obviously Winnipeg, and you think of the names that have gone through that tournament in the last couple of years. And then, you know, the suggestion was, oh, there's a cost involved for the Alberta teams, but then that doesn't explain why Winnipeg would be willing to come all the way. Like, Penticton's just the perfect spot. It's the perfect, perfect size. The weather is great. The rink is spectacular for an event like that. Like, there was so much good there.
Yeah.
I hope that the Canucks aren't willing to let this thing go without a fight. Like, I hope there's
a
way.
Cost has got to be pretty limited. Like, what's the cost? Like, just putting two guys in, like, I'm all two guys to every hotel room, and you get like NHL rates, and like it can't be that expensive for an
right,
NHL
for
team.
Multi-million-dollar operations. Their prospects are going to play somewhere. Like, they're, you know, even if Calgary and Edmonton do something in the province of Alberta, like, there's still going to be hotel nights and those types of costs for them.
Right, but so. I mean, I remember a few years ago whenever the training camp was in Prince George. There was talk then that Burke wanted to pull the Alberta teams out or have the Canucks or switch it up and have the tournament in Alberta every other year. It is profitable. I'm not sure. Like, I don't think like it's hugely profitable, but they do make money. So if you're looking at it from a cost perspective and the Alberta teams can get their own thing and make a little bit of money, you know, it's super unfortunate if that's how they're looking at it. Like, I haven't called around to ask about this. I certainly will at some point, because I am surprised that the Canucks couldn't pull another team into the mix, like Vegas, you would think.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't Vegas? Like, I think that the Penticton experience is perfect. Like, it's a great environment. It's especially if you get four NHL teams with their top prospects all playing together. It's a great measuring stick. I think that we've seen players like Troy Stetcher have great tournaments and carry that on to the NHL team, and like get some momentum that carried on into, you know, main training camp. So that's going to be way different playing, you know, UBC and college hockey compared to playing the Flames best prospects and the Oilers best prospects. And the other thing is that I'm surprised that this other teams, they haven't been able to pitch this to other teams to bring them to replace the Flames and the Oilers. Like, it's a great team building experience. Like, quite often during the course of an NHL regular season, when teams are in Vancouver and they have a break, they go up to Whistler and they have their three nights in Whistler or four nights in Whistler, and it's all about team building. Others have gone to Kelowna and the Okanagan to do their team building. Like, that's a great spot to do some prospect team building, because you want to get these guys together to get to know each other, to create friendships and bonds that will carry on, so that when they're together in the NHL, they have this connection of playing in these tournaments and playing at a high level. So maybe the Canucks just got word too late that the Flames and the Oilers were pulling out. But in the future, why can't Seattle and Vegas, for instance, why can't those, you know, Vancouver, Winnipeg, Seattle, and Vegas, and the tournament would be, you know, make it great again.
I thought I heard Gilman say that the California teams in Arizona and Vegas were doing their own sort of thing, down a little Sun Belt kind of tournament. But I'm with you. Like, there's got to be a way. Bring somebody else, Seattle, right, when they get here.
Convince someone.
Because it makes too much sense. Like, it's a great event. And to your team building point, like, the Flames, they may not like the cost, but, you know, 10:40, we went out for a little dinner at one of the wineries one night. The Flames had one of those long tables, like 40 staffers. They seem to be enjoying themselves.
Right.
So, you know, it's one of those times where, like, throughout the hockey season, Travis Green and Trent Cull don't get to spend any time together. They're both busy running their own programs within the same organization, but, you know, it's a chance to have your minor league coach, like Trent Cull, ran the Canuck bench, but, you know, it's just an opportunity for coaches and managers all sort of to get together early in the season. And
yeah, know, right. Cause and, everyone's there. Like all yeah. the scouts are there, all the GMs, the top, you know, presidents, everyone would show up to Penticton. So it's another thing is to mingle with the other teams, make connections. The scouts can make connections. The GMs can make connections that could lead to deals like later on in the season, could lead to trades later on. I think that, it's a really loose, effective environment. For the scouts, for the prospects. So it is, yeah, it's like a gut punch to see it this year. And then, oh man, like to think that happened and then Pettersson doesn't sign and he's not there. Oh my God. I'm not sure I would go then.
Why do you have to leave it on such a downer?
No, Pettersson will be there kicking ass.
I expect him to as well. I'm not sure about the future of the PatCast here in the short term. I mean, we'll figure something out around the draft and into free agency, but I know you're taking a little downtime after this exhaustive list of prospects has been released. But I do, and I was asked by the boss, Chappie, he said, like, if you got time on the podcast, he had somebody go to him yesterday and wanted to know why you're blocking people on Twitter.
What do you mean?
Some guy,
Well, I don't, if you're going to be negative to me and you're going to criticize me in a way that I don't find, is right. Yeah. I'm going to block that person. Of course. I don't need negativity in my life. Like, I don't like, my life is hard enough. Okay. Like, I carry the weight of the newspaper world on my shoulders. I've got three young kids. I need, you know, I'll take it sometimes and I'll take it from my bosses and I'll take it from certain people. And if you do it in the right way, but, if yeah. if you're going to call my dad a clown or something like that, you're going to get blocked.
Is that what happened? Cause,
someone did. Yeah.
The guy was, at Dude Abided, he's got a one.
Oh, okay.
Of the
Dude
I.
Abided. Okay. Here's what happened. I'll tell you exactly what happened. Dude Abided.
In his Twitter profile, he calls himself a keyboard warrior. So.
Right. Okay. So this is like, this is the other thing that's.
But he went running to Chappie.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, fuck him, man. He's not getting unblocked that and fuck that. No, what happened with him was he made a comment about Spezza to me, like, oh, Spezza's amazing or something about. Not amazing, but the coaching may have been the problem in Vancouver. So I responded to him and then all of a sudden, like it just took off and I was getting fucking for like, I made this comment and for like 48 hours later, I was still getting mentions about Spezza and he's like arguing with all these guys. And it was just like, I can't read another fucking word about Spezza. Like I just can't do it. Like I'm Spezza'd out. So yeah, like temporarily. Sometimes I will block people. So you're not like, I don't like my mentions are like, I want to keep that as a place where I can communicate with people and I can have discussions with people. And you kind of wreck it if you got him in there and then Lee Powell jumped in and he's got like 15 tweets on it. I'm like, fuck this, man. I'm blocking both of these guys. I'll unblock them. I won't unblock him now that he's complained to my higher ups. Like, who does that?
Apparently
like email
he
me. I would have like anyone that asks if you ever are blocked and you want me to unblock you, you email me and ask, and I will 100% do it.
Just a request, like they don't have to lay out a case. They don't have to.
If you care enough,
do they need references.
If you care enough to, there's nothing great going on my Twitter anyway. Like it's not some fucking phenomenal. You're not missing out.
Yeah, and by the way,
I'm not some great fucking Twitter person. I don't.
By the way, don't come to me. And this happens a lot. Asking me to get botched.
Yeah.
To unblock you. No, I don't
email
want to be the, I don't want to be the middleman.
Email me if you care, and I will. But like you're not like these people complain, oh, you blocked me. You're not missing out on anything. There's nothing fucking I'm not like what am I doing? There's nothing special going on.
No, apparently
right?
McKenzie's the guy. He's got the great
yeah,
the great
McKenzie
stuff.
McKenzie has all the great stuff. So it yeah, if you're gonna be a dick, generally, I'm going to block you. I'll unblock eventually. And if you're going to spam my mentions with 100 fucking tweets about Spezza, fuck that. I'm out. I'm fucking out. You're blocked.
Spezza's one win away from being on the verge. I guess he's two wins away, but see what happens tonight. Lucas Spezza's going to play for the Stanley Cup.
We'll see. We'll see. Long series.
All right. You're going to get a little downtime.
I know. Well, I think I gotta do. I think I'm gonna do a Gallagher Hall of Fame story this week. I think I'm gonna go to that Hall of Fame, BC Hall. You're gonna go to that?
I have not been invited yet, but I can be your plus one.
No, I've gotta take my wife to that.
Oh,
man.
All right.
She's always like, we have to do more social. Like, I don't want to. I'm not into like.
But she wants to go to, like,
she wants to socialize all the fucking time.
In the sporting realm, though? Like, my wife would want no part of that.
Oh, my God. She's, like, wherever. Like,
my wife is angry. We're in the third round of the playoffs. Like, my wife still is angry when I'm watching hockey. She's like, there's hockey again tonight? Like, she knows how this works, and, like, she seems surprised. And now, the world, there's hockey in the morning, too. So, like, she'll get up, and I'll be watching hockey. There's hockey in the morning! Like, so, but I'm still, like, I'm amazed that, like, she is surprised by the fact that there's hockey on every night.
Yeah, it's like
this is how it works.
Like, I know.
I've only been doing this for a few years. I figure it out.
No.
But like she wouldn't want any part of, like, a
she wouldn't go,
sporting social.
No?
No.
Yeah, but my wife is the same way. Like, doesn't want anything to do with sports. But anything social, like, she, like, you, like, she'll put.
You're going to have to get dressed up. And
she'll put pressure points on me. To like, we need more, like, for instance, you need more couple things. We need a couple dinner. We need to go to someone's house. And like, and if you don't set this up, like, and she'll pull things away from me and say, like, you don't get this, you don't get that, you don't get this.
Uh-oh.
So if you're free and you got
no, don't go
you're looking
there.
For a couple
no,
dinner,
no, no.
I'm ready to go. My wife's ready to go at any time.
Honey, the Botchfords are coming. All right, let's leave it there. PatCast, as always, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. I say it every time, but I mean it. They've supported us. We ask that you support them if you're in the market for a vehicle. Check them out online, eagleridgegm.com. The lot is at 2595 Barnett Highway out in Coquitlam, a couple blocks west of Coquitlam Center. And nice weather to get outside, stroll the lot, find a ride that is right for you. And the next time we do this, who knows? Maybe Elias Pettersson will have a contract. He'll have put pen to paper, and all of this stuff will be behind us. Until then, though, I'm going to leave you the last word on this. It's a story, right?
It is a story. And I funnel it all to me, and I will make the determinations and make the declarations. Yes, it is a story. You can write your 1,000 words on it.
For the story determiner, Jason Botcher, this is Jeff Patterson. Thanks so much as always, and again, sporadic PatCasts in the weeks ahead. But if the occasion arises and the news is big enough, we'll ring that bell. The bat signal will go up, and we'll record ourselves a PatCast right here on Province Radio.